Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 9, delivered on September 19, 2017. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Today, Annuities and Perpetuities. Now, before I do that, a couple of things just to enlighten you. Oh, let me show you something real quick here. This is a website, you might want to write it down, where you can get Treasury bill yields. Write down that URL. It might do you some real good when I open up an in-class pop quiz tonight on ReggieNet. Let me assure you that saying I didn't see anything like this on the board is not going to fly this time. If you're here, you're here. If you're not, you're not. The Treasury yields here, this is for 1 month. You can go back a lot farther. Like, you could go back and look at all of 2017, for example, or not. Go. Okay. And you might have someone say, well, what has been the change from the beginning of the year to September 15th in the one-year Treasury rate? That could be a question that someone might ask you. And you would express that in basis points. So if you looked at from the beginning of the year down, you should be able to identify one-year column, and the one-year T-bill rate column, and have a look down that meat grinder and see what the change has become. Or it could be a couple of other dates I could ask, or someone could. I certainly might not ask that, but someone could. So it would be worth your while to know this website. There are others, by the way, that also show you Treasury yields. Don't get me wrong. But this is kind of like the go-to. It's the government, it's the Treasury, Department of the Treasury, its own website, keeping track of the Treasury bill rates. But you find other information there, too, that might be valuable for you on a quiz. Someone might ask you, well, what is the September 1st yield on a 20-year Treasury bond or something like that? But you should be able to just look at this data and see the numbers right there. Remember, those are expressive percentages. But oftentimes, when I ask something about credit default, credit risk spread, that actually could be in basis points too. Like a reference rate. There are a couple of different definitions of a reference rate. But these rating agencies like Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch, they rate bonds AAA, AA, they have slightly different rating letters that they use. But oftentimes a reference rate would be like, okay, what's the reference rate that Standard & Poor's is reporting for a AAA corporate bond? And then that would be, okay, well, let's say that a AAA by Standard & Poor's is averaging a 4.85% coupon right now. That is used by, you want to borrow money. You're a corporation, you want to borrow money. We figured out that you are a AAA corporation. So what we would do is we would use that as our reference rate to set your coupon rate. Well, your AAA's on the reference are at 4.85, so we're going to make your bonds 4.85% coupon. Or you're a AAB. Well, we would look for the reference rate for that one and say that's the one that you should use. Now, these are useful for underwriting purposes. But of course, once the bond is out there, interest rates are going to move, the reference rate would move, so obviously your bond isn't going to stay right at par or all that. But anyway, those are things that are useful to know. So for example, if I said that a 30-year AAA reference rate right now is 4.85%, and then I go down here and I look right now, a 30-year, go right here, a 30-year Treasury bill is running at 2.80%. Treasury bond, I should say, is at 2.80%. And I showed you this last time, and I want to just remind you of that. It might be worth you knowing. Okay, in other words, what I'm looking at is 2.05, or the credit risk spread is 205 basis points right now. In other words, a corporate bond has some default premium in it. Comparing it as close as we can to a perfectly riskless Treasury bond, we'd say that the credit risk spread for private versus public debt on 30 years is 205 basis points. We could also call that the default risk spread. But we like to use these credit reference, these reference rates to see how much more you get for investing in private paper rather than in completely riskless public paper. It's called the credit risk spread. Someone might give you a reference rate for some corporate bond. And then what you would do is go back and look at the what the rate right now is for a Treasury bond of, or Treasury note or whatever it is of the same duration, and you can calculate a credit risk spread on that. It's a little something that would be worth you knowing for some occasion, very soon, very, very soon. I'm going to show you something now before I go on. I'm going to take you back to a very dark place in your past. Really, really bad place. It's called high school algebra, okay? Or I'm sure you've taken your math here at Illinois State University. Now, if you're the typical person, you try to purge it from your mind as soon as it's over. You might keep some things, but some things you're going to get rid of real fast. And so I'm going to bring you back to something, an algebraic technique that you might have. I know you were shown this technique, but you might have thrown it out, or you might not remember why you would ever want to use it. What if we had, I don't know, you invested $2,000 at 7.5% APR. And you had a goal of holding that money in the bank, that money in savings, until you had $3,865. Oops. How long would that take? How many years would that take? I didn't say anything about compounding. If I don't say it, don't assume it. You might give me ideas.
How long would this take in years?
Now remember the formula. You have future value is the present value times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods. Now this is simple. This is a one-year annual compounding because I didn't say anything else. And there's no implication that there was any faster compounding. So if there's no indication, it's just one period per year. Well, in this case, we've got $3,865 is your future value. $2,000 is your present value times 1 plus your interest rate, but we don't know the number of years. Lucky you. Here we have just a simple algebra problem, just a plain old algebra problem. Tell me, madam, how do you solve this? Do you remember the technique in algebra?
Yeah, multiply, multiply
6 by 2,000 and then take
the square root.
The square root.
Yeah.
You scared me there. You acted very confident there. You got anything? Oh, that was weird. There was a grain of reason in there. But, I mean, anyone got the technique? Do you remember it? Yeah? You're using the logarithm, which is correct, but we might want to take a few steps along the way here. And I wouldn't use log base 10. I mean, we'll use natural logs because they're so much more sophisticated. I mean, if you're going into a math singles bar and you say, let's do the log base 10, you might find a friend for the night. But, I mean, if you use natural log, you will definitely find a friend for the night and you won't even have to use that Tinder app. First things first here. We're going to get the 2,000 off there. And the way, full disclosure warning, I taught math for 10 years at Ohio State. And I do math sort of like step by step because you peel away the superfluous. I'm after that little son of a, that little thing right there. And I want to take away as much as I can, strip down until this problem, until I can expose that on its own. So I'm going to get the 2,000 on the other side of this thing, and that gets me a little closer to what I want. You see how I've gotten that 2,000 off there? So now it's a little bit closer to getting to that T. And what I'm going to do here, okay, I'm going to take the 865 dollars divided by 2,000. $1.9325. And I'm going to do that little simple math in the middle there to make it a little easier. Now, this is where logarithms are at their most useful in basic algebra. Because when I do a logarithm, I'm going to take the natural log of both sides. And you're right, I could do the log base 10. I could use the log base 18. But natural logs and common logs are on the calculator. So I'm going to do the log of 1.9325. equals the natural log of 1.075 to the t power. Now, the reason I would do that is because the log of a number to a power is the same as putting the power out front as a multiplication. That's about the biggest thing you can do with logs, is once you have a logarithm, you can peel that exponent off and stick it on the outside, where it is a lot easier to work with. And so, finishing this little thing up, this is just a number, log 1.075. So I can do the natural log of not 1.9325 over the natural log of 1.075. And there we are, there's your T sticking out there, just looking at you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the, this thing is tiny, this calculator, the log of 1.9375, close the parentheses, divided by the natural log of 1.075. What? 9325? I was just testing you there, just to see if you were watching. There. Close the parentheses. And now I can say equals 9.1096 years. T is 9.1096, is that right? Years. That's how you solve for the years. Whenever you have an exponent that's unknown, just take the log of both sides, and then you can strip that exponent off and stick it out front as a factor. That's all there is to it. Don't ask why, or you will be very sorry with how much I explained to you. By the way, little bit of trivia for you trivia hounds out there. Logarithms were developed by a fellow at the end of the 1600s, an absolute genius. It was his big claim to fame, although he completely rejected all of the stuff he had done that all of the mathematicians of the world were thinking was incredible. He went insane. He actually said that his greatest contribution was that he had figured out that the end of the world would happen on the first day of the 18th century. In other words, 1701 would be the end of the world. He thought that was his greatest creation. He died thinking that, fortunately, before that day arrived. So anyway, now, one last thing. In case someone says, I don't want decimal years, who uses decimal years? Oh, God. Okay, well, we can do that. And I want you to just kind of keep this written down. I don't know that I would ask you this. I don't think anyone would ask you that in this class, but you might run into it a little later. How do you turn decimal years into actual years and days? Well, that's actually kind of easy. All you do is subtract off the integer part, in this case minus 9, and then times the result by 365 days a year. So the answer is my ass. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a, okay. In other words, the actual answer is 9 years and 40 days, about. That didn't look right at first, but it is. Now, if you really want to be tedious, okay, we'll subtract off the 40 days, and multiply that remaining part by 24. No. That's when you get beaten up, when you go that far. But I mean, you can actually, all you do is just peel off the integer part and multiply by the number of days if you've peeled off the years, or multiply by the number of hours in a day if you've gotten it down to the days. So in this case, 9 years, 40 days, and about, we could do that, times 60 minutes. Yes, I'm going to go there. 21 minutes. Or 22 minutes. So there's your accuracy. If you've noticed, Pearson is really bitchy about accuracy. Anyway, that's enough of that nonsense. But if I'm not mistaken, I've let you kind of struggle through the first few chapters on your own in the homework quizzes and tests. And now I'm going to show you, here's the background. If they ask you a question like this, they don't warn you. They just show a problem like this. It's easy. You just take the logs. Just follow what I did there. And again, don't ask why you're doing it. Now, a little bit of naming stuff. Again, do some naming. And if I'm not mistaken, you were shown this in your accounting class, but I'm not going to assume that you remember that. Okay. I showed you last week lump sums of money. How to look at the future value, how to look at the present value. Those aren't too hard. Once you get the hang of it, it's just algebra on the calculator. Now, these that I'm going to show you this week are, you can do them on the calculator, just like, you know, equation. But this is where the power of those TI-83 finance apps really comes shining through, because it can make it a lot faster for you to do it. And if I'm not mistaken, well, I'll have to ask this in a minute, but I'm kind of curious to know what's going on with the accounting courses right now. But first things first. Stream of cash is called, a stream of cash flows is called an annuity. I mean, technically, one cash out there, what we did last week, is an annuity of one amount. But what we're talking about this week is something a little more, not a little more, it's quite a bit more realistic. It's when you have a timeline like 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and the cash flow is something like 200, 400, year 1, year 200, year 2, 400, year 3, 500, year 4, 200, and year 5, 50. That's an annuity, a stream. A lot of what happens in business in terms of project decisions is looking at what is going to happen as far as our expectations of the cash flow from what we do. Positive or negative. If we take on a project, we have to project the cash flows that are going to arise from that project through its life. That can be a project of a couple of years. In some cases, it's a project that's like 15 years. In some cases, you actually kind of talk about projects that are like very long term. Think about product life cycle. There are a lot of products in their when they're first introduced. There isn't much acceptance of the project, of the product. And then as time goes on, with proper marketing of the time that you're in that age, you will begin to create brand loyalty, and that can go on for years. Eventually, though, you don't take the product off the shelf usually. You just sort of let it die into the mature phase of its life cycle. Many years ago, there were products that you see in sort of like the cheapo section, which were the hot stuff of their time. But they don't go away, they just kind of peter out, and so you have this tail that can go on for decades on some of these. And so we have to have methods to look at, over the life cycle of a product, how much is the present value of those cash flows? Now, you could do that a crazy way and take the present value of $200 for 1 year, the present plus the present value of $400 for 2 years, plus the present value of $500, and do it that way. Yeah, that's way too much like work. We have shortcuts to do it that give us the answers. Okay, annuity. First things first. When the cash flows are at the end of each period, we call that an ordinary annuity. It's ordinary. On your calculator in the app section, if you're using a TI, what you do, really clear, apps, I didn't want to do that. Finance. In the TVM solver, make sure that if you know, do these cash flows begin, are each of these cash flows at the end of every period or at the beginning? If it's an ordinary annuity, make sure your toggle is on N. If they're at the beginning of each period, then you want to use the begin. Now, a begin, if it's one of those annuities where each of the components starts when the cash flows are at the beginning, of each period, we call it an annuity due. Make sure you know which one it is. In some cases, they won't tell you, but it's obvious from the problem. Like, for example, if you get a loan for a car, you've decided that you want to get yourself a nice car. If you're considering your payments as an annuity, a 5-year monthly annuity, would that be an ordinary annuity or would that be an annuity due? Would they make you make your first payment when you get the loan, or would they make you make your first payment a month later?
A month later.
Bingo. So which one would it be, at the end of the periods or at the beginnings?
Good.
That's an ordinary annuity. Normally, and I'm going to show you in the next lecture how to calculate loan payments. You would make sure that the button was on end, because almost always, consumer loans or even corporate borrowings are annuities ordinary. They're ordinary. There are, as a matter of fact, the annuity due, you almost might think, well, is there ever a time when there could be you'd see an annuity due? Yes. An example of that would be, so for example, you have just had a child. Animal. Okay. So, on that day of the birth, you're very excited. You leave the hospital to go have, to get a couple of cheeseburgers, and then you say, I've got to be responsible, so you drive to the bank to put in a plop of money that you will put in every year from 0 through 17, and then let it ride till the kid is 18, and then you will take all that money out and give it to him for college. Would that be an annuity ordinary or an annuity due? It's at the beginning of each period, so that would be an annuity due. So there are times when you are actually calculating annuity due. It would be when the first amount of money that you put into something or that you pay on something or whatever happens right away. And so that in the last period, in an annuity due, you would see all of these shift over one, and then the last amount, the $50, would ride out that last year. That'd be an annuity due. And believe me, you'll see me draw a timeline sometimes because they're so useful. Go.
Okay, that's the next thing. I'm glad you brought that up. I was talking, I almost forgot to bring that up. Okay, when the annuity has each of the cash flows is the same, we call that a level annuity. The cash flow components are the same. That's called a level annuity. A level annuity. And that would be exactly what loan payments would be, because each of your loan payments is identical. Coupon-bearing bonds are all level annuities because they all have the same, except at the end, the bond annuity has that nasty little thing, the $1,000 that you get back at the end. So that blows the level annuity part, but we've got a way that we can get around that. Level annuities are great because it is really fast to do them on the calculator. Unfortunately, real world, you don't have level. It's going to be year to year, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, some years up, some years down. We can't do it. However, stock, common stock, if it pays a dividend, it takes the shape of a perpetual level annuity or a perpetual constant growth annuity. Those have a really, really simplified formula. If an annuity goes on forever, we call it a perpetuity. Here's the interesting thing in financial planning about perpetuities. Many times, an endowment is set up so that a certain amount of money goes into the endowment every year for, let's say, 20 years. And if you do it right, then the deposits can stop and you can withdraw a certain amount of money from that endowment forever and never touch the principal. That is a foundation of endowments, is that if you plan it properly, you can put enough money into an account over a period of time so that then forever that thing yields you a flat amount of money every year. Hence why we can say to someone who wants to endow a fellowship, okay, if you put this into it now or this much into it over a period of the next 15, 20 years, we can pay for that fellowship forever. We can take out a certain amount of money forever. There used to be an advertisement on TV many decades ago where they would say, they were encouraging people to save money, and they said, if you put $50 into an account every month for 20 years, you can then withdraw $50 forever. You can, every month, forever. You can until you die, your children, your children's children, forever, $50 can be withdrawn, and you'll never touch the principal. That is a powerful thing about perpetuities. They're very cool that way. And they're a way that you can, if you do it right, you can create something that is essentially for the rest of eternity a payment back to you. If you plan to live that long, that is. Okay. Now, you need to have a discount rate. You need a discount rate to do this. So let's look at that one right there. That one's a pain in the butt, and I'm actually going to show you on the calculator how you can make it a lot faster. But, okay, a mother's work is never done. Let's say 6% APR. Now, let's try this. How many compoundings per year will this thing have? You got an answer for that? How many compoundings per year? I've just said we've got this profile for some kind of a project. How many compoundings per year is this going APR going to use for my calculation? Bingo. I didn't say anything about compoundings. The cash flow components are yearly, so there's nothing, no reason for me to divide that 6% by any 2 or 4 or 12 or anything like that. Just simple. Now, the pain in the rear of this one is that you're going to have to take 200 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative first plus 400 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative second plus 500 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative third plus 200 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative fourth plus 50 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative fifth. You add all those up and you get the present value of that ordinary non-level annuity. I write problems like that, then I actually have to do them. So I would encourage you to watch my arithmetic as I do this. Okay. It would be 200 times 1.06 to the negative first. God, why did I do one this long? I don't think I have to put parentheses in there. Let me do something real quick here. Yeah, I don't have to put a parenthesis in there. Okay, so let me do it. 200 times 1.06. I really regret doing one this long to the negative 1 plus 400 times 1.06 to the negative second. What do I do? Did I miss something? 6 to the, let me see, to the negative second plus 500. Oh, that's 400. No, that's 400, then 500. 500 times 1.06 to the negative third, Lord, plus 1 point, plus 200 times 1.06 to the negative fourth plus 50 times 1.06 to the negative fifth. $1,160.27. The present value of this cash flow is $1,160.27. $1,160.27. Notice that, of course, 200 plus 400 is 600, 500 is 1,100, 200 more is $1,350. The present value is less than just the sum of the cash flows. That's the result of the decay of future money. Notice also, just as a side point, as we go farther out in time, cash flows become less and less worthy. So that's one of the problems with the way we calculate in modern capitalist finance, is that these cash flows, even if something has a very long stream of cash flows, they aren't going to they're going to discount back so heavily that by the time you look at them at now, they become almost worthless. And that is a problem because that tends to bias us away from very long-term projects. Yeah. Because it's a present value. I'll show you. Let me remind you of the formula. The future value is the present value times 1 plus the periodic rate to the number of years. Flipping that that around, that would mean that the present value is the future value over 1 plus the periodic rate to the number of years. But I can write that as future value times 1 plus the periodic rate to the negative power. And you'll see me do it that way just because denominators can get you into more trouble just accidentally not putting a parenthesis. It's a little bit more of a sophisticated technique. But you can do it with the denominators. It doesn't hurt. You'll just see me use negative exponents for the way I do it. Mm. Let me clear this out. Now, actually, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to show you a dirty trick way to do this one a little later. But before I do that, we look at level annuities. They are very popular, very common. Level annuities in financial planning, we can put in a certain amount of money. You invest $400 every month for 20 years at an APR of 5.8%. You make your first deposit right now. How much will you have at the end of 20 years? Now, you could be, if you want to be really butch about this, let's do 18, 19, 20 years. Okay, here's year 0, year 1, year 2, year 3. You're going to put in $400 every month. Whoops, that would be actually 240. 20 years times 12, yeah, 240. Month 4, month 5, all the way out 240. Now, if you were a really, really didn't have anything to do with your time, and you wanted to get a casting position on Big Bang Theory, you could actually do the future value of each of these out. The first $400, $240 future value. The second one, $239. Yeah, that would be way too much like work. But we can do it this way. Now, in your accounting class, they had you use tables to do problems like that. Is that correct? You actually looked up? No. Don't do that. No. I mean, you can tell I'm a very conservative, traditional person. You know, I'm actually a little bit upset with this whole thing about integers. In my day, zeros and ones were enough. You know, and sometimes we didn't even have the ones, we had the zeros, but we didn't have any ones, but we still made do. But anyway, enough of that. Look, use a fool calculator, apps, finance, time value of money.
See that N right there? We've got 20 years. And this is every month, so we would do 12 periods for the total of 240. The I percent, do you see that there is the implicit compounding by 12? Do you see it? So we're going to take the APR, which I said was 5.8, and just divide it by 12, right there in that slot. Don't do it on your own. Just do the, it'll do the math, and you don't have to enter. Just go down, see how it does it on its own. Do you see that? Now, the present value. That would be if you had a kicker that you put in at the beginning. In other words, well, we're going to start this off with an extra $5,000. In this one, I didn't tell you there was any initial kicker on this amount. Always think of those with annuities. Sometimes, if you're looking for a present value, leave the future value, that FV, alone, unless there's a kicker at the end. If you're looking at an annuity and you're trying to find the future value, unless you've got a kicker at the beginning, leave that PV alone. In this case, I'm not worried about that right now. The one thing that is going to, my payments, I said that they were going to be $400 a month. Now, I'm going to look to go up here and calculate the FV, but am I forgetting something? Look at this. Am I forgetting something? That's right, because this is an annuity due. Your first payment starts right away, and the last payment rides a month. So in this case, begin. Now we can go up and find the future value. And all you do for that one is say alpha solve. And you'll have $181,371.61 in the account at the end of 20 years. That is financial planning. Figuring out if you want some amount of money in the future and you want to put in regular level payments, well, here's how you calculate the amount. Or you could even go backwards. Let's try one like this. Okay, I'm trying to think. I know. Who's an accountant here? You almost raised your hand. Are you an accountant? Admit it.
No. Okay.
Finance major?
I'm an accounting major.
You're an accounting major. Okay. You are going willing to suffer for 30 years being an accountant, but you have an exit strategy. You want to put enough money into the bank every quarter for the next 30 years so that you have $1 million that you can pull out. And you can go on to what it was you really wanted to do with your life, which was world domination. You want $1 million in the bank in 30 years. No, let's do it putting in, depositing a certain amount of money every week starting now. Your APR will be 6.25%. How much will each of these weekly payments be? Believe me, the calculator is your friend. You can do this with tables. You can do this with an arithmetic formula, but believe me, this is just too much easier to ignore. Now, let's go back up here. These are weekly, so the implicit compounding will be 52 times a year for 30 years. Times 52. You don't hit enter, you just keep rolling down. Your percentage will be 6.25%. By the way, notice that you put it in as a percent in this app. If you're doing straight arithmetic, don't ever use a percent. But in this app, you, and in almost all of the financial apps, you do it this way. We don't have an initial kicker. You're not putting in any money to start this. There's no present amount. We don't know the payments this time. Just leave that alone. We'll go back up and do that. Don't clear it or you might get an error. It gets weird that way sometimes. But the future value, now you can put this in as a positive or a negative. The calculator likes PVs and FVs as negatives, but there you are. I'm going to put in $1 million. And this is, again, an annuity due because you're going to start putting the money in right away and let the last week's payment ride a week. So we go back up to the payments and we say, Alpha, solve this. Oh, I forgot to do this. I forgot to divide by 6.25. Let's try this again. 6.25. Divided by 52. I was talking there instead of doing that. Now let's go down and get payment. Alpha solve. You'd have to put in every week out of your pocket, the negative is out of your pocket, about $217.74. And in 30 years, you can live your dream. I've shown you a way out. Okay? This, again, is financial planning. People say, we want to buy this in this many years. Well, let's talk about what it'll cost in that many years. And now we can tell you how much you have to put in the bank every week, every month, every quarter, every year, whatever it is, so that you can have that happen for you. Now we're going to do one last one here. Where we actually, yeah, go ahead.
Can you show us again how you got to that screen?
Oh, yeah, to get out of it, you say second quit. To go into it, apps, finance, TVM solver. Apps, finance, or hit the number one, and that takes you right to that sweet screen right there. And that is one of the, there's a couple. Now, this one I'm going to show you now. I should not be showing you for this kind of, for these problems. It's supposed to be for some used for something else. But you know, sometimes you have a tool, it will work, and you just don't let anyone else see you use the tool, even though it works. Okay? And don't ask me why. You'll actually know. We're going to use this tool for its intended purpose later. But for example,
If I've run out of propane in my grill, I've got an arc welder. You would not believe how good a ribeye steak is if you hit it right with the arc welder. Toast, I don't have a toaster, but I do have an oxyacetylene torch. So there you are. Apps. I'm going to go back and do that problem right there. You see that problem right there? The one that I had to do those present values. Actually, that's about the only way you can do those when they have a non-level non-level cash flow. But there is actually a way around that. Finance. Go clear down to number 7, NPV. You put in a 0, and then you put in a comma. And then you put in your interest rate, 6%. I think it's supposed to be 6 year. I might get this wrong because I use wrong. It takes a 0.06. Bear with me. It's been a while since I've done this. And then you put in a comma. Now you open up braces. See those braces up there? And then each of the components you put in, 200, 400, 500, 200, 50. Now you close the braces and you close the parenthesis and you hit enter. Is that what I should have gotten for that? No. I'm pretty sure there's the problem. I did this backwards too. 6, and this is supposed to be a 0 here. You put in the interest rate, and then you put in a 0. That's what I did wrong. There it is. The 0 represents the initial cash outflow. Do you see that? That's the same number I got before. Again, I did that wrong the first time. You put in your interest rate, comma, and then a 0 if there's nothing at the beginning. That number there after the interest rate is how much initial investment there is. But here we didn't do an initial investment. But do you see how fast that came out? Instead of doing each of the components as a lump sum present value formula, I just keyed them into this NPV trick, and out came the answer. You see that? That's actually a dirty, fast way to get a non-level annuity. And you can go on with those commas inside those braces. Don't forget to trap them in braces. Use commas. Commas everywhere. And don't forget to close the braces and close the parentheses. But if you do that, you can put in a non-level, and that's actually, this calculator has been around for a very long time. When I was in the business, if we wanted to do a realistic non-level annuity for projecting cash, for figuring out what the value of an annuity, a non-level annuity was, we just pulled up this app and did it instead of doing it the hard way. Okay? So there you are. There's a dirty little trick for a non-level annuity. It's not as fast as the one for the level annuities I showed you with the other app, but this one is pretty darn nice. Yeah.
Can you give an example of a non-level annuity where you know the amount
was going to
be put in every year?
Or you were going to earn every year or something like that? Well, here's one that would be a non-level annuity. A lot of our financial planning, the last realistic part would be where we have people pledge to put in, let's say, 10% of every take-home pay of every take-home into an account. That would end up being non-level because theoretically your salary would be growing over the years, hopefully.
Or another one that would be an example of that would be, we have annuities where they essentially, we make it so that the largest amounts that you put in are earlier in your life. And then as time goes on, the amounts we put in are later in your life. The reason we can do that sometimes is that, okay, let me look at someone. You, sir, look very healthy. Strapping young man. I know what you're going to look like at 40. Pot belly, diabetes, heart problems, and a few things we won't mention in class can be fixed with a pill. You see, what's going to happen is that the probability of his earnings declines with his age. At the age of 43, you're walking along, and all of a sudden, you start having fussing about your chest. Okay, that would mean that you suddenly have become less able to earn money. So sometimes what we'll do is we will structure accounts in such a way that people put in more money in their early years, in their mid-20s to their mid-30s or 40. And then the amount in there goes down. The reason being that even if you did get hit with something in your mid-40s, it wouldn't have as much of an impact on your final amount for retirement at 60, 70. That's sometimes something that we do, so that where your higher risk is where there's less impact on your final amount that you have in your account for retirement. That's an example there. There are all kinds of them. In corporate, non-level annuities are just realistically the way it happens. And so it's one of those things where we just assume that for these purposes, don't get me wrong, the level annuities are great because there are a lot of situations where we do have level annuities, loan payments and all that. Last thing, and I'll do this on the next lecture, but one last one. You want to buy a car, the car of your dreams. What's the car of your dreams, madam? A Chevy? Really? Let's be a little more ambitious here. Don't go overboard, but what car do you want? You've been responsive today. Madam, what car do you want? Oh, really? You in a car, Corvette? That's death on the road for everyone in front of you. Okay, we'll do a Corvette. Corvette. Okay, let's talk. Find the price of a Corvette. 80 grand? You knew that real fast, dude. Yeah, that sounds about right, actually. Okay, fine. We're going to do this. We're going to go on apps, finance. Oops. Well, I keep doing that wrong. Okay, apps, finance. TVM solver. The number of periods, we're going to do a 60-month loan at an APR of 5.99%. Divided by 12, you want to borrow, and you'll put this in as a negative, 80 grand. We're going to go down here, the future value, there's no kicker at the end, and these payments are at the end of every month. You go back up to payments, alpha, solve. Your payments will be $1,546 a month. It's doable. In my case, it is. But that ain't going to happen, and that's all I have for you today. I thank you.